Anything you want here. Anything you need. And this is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I'll be with you for the next 55 minutes or so talking literary things. Sometimes we talk about things that are happening internationally, sometimes nationally, sometimes regionally. This week we have three exciting events all happening in Nevada County in the next 6 days. There'll be readings or performances by Steve Sanfield, William O'Day, and Martin Buchanan. I'll be talking with Steve Sanfield and Martin Buchanan in the next hour and tell you a little bit more about William O'Daly. Steve Sanfield is probably a very familiar name to anyone who has paid any attention to writing of many sorts in Nevada County or even around the U.S. as a whole. He's a poet, a storyteller. He was the founder of the CR Storytelling Festival at the North Columbia Schoolhouse Cultural Center, which, how many years did you run that, Steve?
I was there as the artistic director for 18 years, and now it's going into its 21st year this summer.
Right. I know that you weren't sure, you thought you were leaving it at its peak.
Yes, it went into hibernation for a year or so, and like a sleeping bear, it was ready to come out of the cave. People demanded that it come forth again, and it did last year, and this year it will be held, I think, the third weekend of July, which is July 21st through the 23rd.
But if you can't wait that long, and of course, I don't know, are you going to participate in it any in the future?
I don't know about the future this year. I'm just going to be there to listen.
Okay. But Steve will be reading from his new book this Wednesday, November 30th, at the Madeline Helling Library Community Room in Nevada City. And this book is sort of a summation of most of what you've, no, I shouldn't say most, a large chunk of what you've done in the last 40 years. I was interested, it's called The Rain Begins Below, Selected Slightly Longer Poems, 1961 to 2005. 1961, you were pretty young.
Yes, I was. I don't know how young I was in 1961. I was in my 20s. And actually, the earliest poem in this book was written in Morocco, when I was living in Morocco when I was in my early 20s in 1961.
Is that the one about Casablanca?
That's the one about Casablanca, yes.
Going there and finding out it's not at all like the movies?
Yes, you know, most of the images we have of children don't have a lot to do with reality, but it was not like the movie images at all.
And many of the poems you've written are like that. They are responses to very specific situations, to people you've met, stories you've heard, emotions you've felt, landscapes you've been in. You don't seem to write very much in a large philosophical sense.
I suppose that's true. Most of my work comes out of the life I live, the moments that I live. I'm not one of those poets that sits down at his desk every morning and says, gee, I'm going to consider this question of life and death and come up with a poem. I'm going to write a poem today. Most of the poems come to me out of those out of the daily life. As a matter of fact, there is a poem in the book called Religion, which ends with the lines, the secret, if there be a secret, is the daily life. All else is commentary. And I try to stay away from the commentary.
So over the years, you've published actually about a dozen books of poetry, but they've tended to be short and the poems to be very short.
Yeah, much of my work is in the very short form that some people know as haiku. I choose to call it American haiku or hoops. And that's really the reason for the subtitle for the book, which is Selected Slightly Longer Poems, because in some circles, some very small circles, I am known for my haiku poetry. And when my editor and I began to put this together, he felt we should make it clear that none of those small poems or haiku poems would be in here. So for me, a slightly longer poem can be anything from 5 lines and up.
But only up to about 2.5 pages seems to be the maximum.
I don't write a lot of epics. I'm not there to write the Iliad, the Odyssey, or Gilgamesh. I have written poems that go on and on and on, and the very fact that they go on and on and on is the reason they're not in the pages of the book, because they would bore everyone to death.
Did they bore you when you wrote them?
No, I'm never bored. I myself am never bored, least of all when I'm scribbling on blank pages.
But now, years later, you've decided people can do without them.
They've been able to do without them thus far. There's no need to subject anybody to that now.
As I said, a lot of the poems are written about specific places, and the majority of those about specific places in Nevada County. You moved here in the early 70s?
I moved here in 1969, so I've been here about 36 years. All that time I've lived on the San Juan Ridge across the river. And you're right, the poems in the book, they range from settings as diverse as Morocco, Mexico, Greece, the high mesas of Arizona, the farmlands of Kentucky. But most of them come out of my life here in Nevada County and on the San Juan Ridge.
And some of them have to do with very specific historic events, like building the school, which is now called the Oak Tree School. I'm trying to think, what was it called?
It's called the Oak Tree School now. Some of the events in there predate that. There's a poem in the book called Painting the North San Juan School.
Right. That's the one I was thinking of.
That's when we, as a community and as parents, took full responsibility for our schools, and we were running 2 schools at that time. One was the one-room schoolhouse in North Columbia. The other was the one-room schoolhouse in North San Juan. So it became our responsibility to make sure things went well with the schools, even to the coats of paint that covered them.
And you also wrote about looking for Lew Welch, the poet who disappeared.
Yes,
in 1972.
Gone far too soon at age 48, I think he was. I'll be reading that poem on Wednesday night. Lew Welch, for those who might not know, was one of our most accomplished poets, American poets of the 20th century. And he came here in 1971 to build a small writer's cabin. But the demons that had pursued Lew all his life unfortunately caught up with him, and of his own volition, he just disappeared. He left a note saying he had used it all up, and he walked off, and although we searched and searched and searched, Lew Welch and his bones have never been found.
And this is, 33 years later.
Yeah.
Now, though, one of his books, I don't know if this was his title, was called Ring of Bone, and the Zendo on the Ridge is Ring of Bone.
The Zendo on the Ridge was named after a beautiful poem that Lew wrote called Ring of Bone. And it rings like a ring of bone is the last line of it.
You've also in your life written, you've also been a storyteller, obviously, as the person who founded the Storytelling Festival, and you've written a number of books for children, illustrated books.
Yeah, about 10 illustrated books. They call them books for children. I never set out to write them for children, but that's how my New York publishers choose to market them.
And I remember the one that I heard at the Storytelling Festival a couple of years ago was the Great Turtle...
The Great Turtle Drive.
Yeah, which was one of the funniest stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it is the epic of how I made and lost $1 million before I was 21 years old. And although I can't do it here over the radio for lack of time, I would tell your listeners that every word of it was true.
Where, as a person who writes pretty much about place and about specific incidents or specific events, observations, did you come to this naturally? Are there people you've modeled yourself on? You've got a very distinctive style.
Well, interesting question. Thank you for the compliment.
And I should say that unlike many, many poets, Steve's work is almost entirely unmetaphorical. He doesn't compare anything to anything usually. It's just, this is what I saw, this is how it felt. And that's it.
Well, simple and direct is a you know, a guideline of mine. Simple and direct, heart to heart, breath to ear. As far as metaphors go, I only use them when I think they can add to what's going on in the poem. And the lack of metaphor may come out of the fact that I spend much of my time working on those short three-line haiku-like poems. And there's no room for metaphor in those, not if you're writing a poem that only has 11 or 12 words in it.
So if you write that sort of thing, obviously Japanese poetry was one of your main influences.
Yeah, Asian poetry has, for a long time, has maybe for a half a century, has been an influence of my life. I love the Chinese poets, especially the old hermit poets, Du Fu and Li Po and Po Chui and Su Tung Po. And then there's the Japanese poets, Ikkyu and Ryokan, and of course the haiku masters, Isa and Buson. They've been a profound influence on me, as have a number of Spanish-speaking poets. The Spaniards, Antonio Machado and Vicente Alexandre, and of course the great Federico Garcia Lorca. There are so many others.
But you've never spent much time in the Orient, or?
I've never spent any time in the Orient, to tell you the truth. I once had a burning desire to do so, and as the years passed, it just, the flames just burnt down into embers, and the embers disappeared. But I have spent a lot of time in Spanish-speaking countries.
And also in Greece?
In Greece. Greece has become kind of a second home to me. And the Greek poets also have had a deep influence on me. I think one of the first poems and poets in my life was Homer. As a young boy, I was caught by the Iliad and the Odyssey, which then led me to the Greek lyrical poets like Archilochus. And today I still read Greek poets like Kazantzakis and Konstantin Kavafi.
And how about the Greek anthology?
Well, that's one of my favorite books.
Yeah. Because those are very short epigrams that are straight to the point, and they say what they have to say and then move on.
Well, a lot of those, apparently, from my research, are just fragments of poems that work. I'm hoping maybe someday in 100 years they can take fragments of my 11-line poems and cut them down and make them work even better.
There's no American poets in your list.
Well, that's not a complete list, and those are really the poets that influence me the most. I read a lot of American poets. I certainly read my contemporaries and my many friends and comrades. If I were to make a list of American poets, it would be difficult. I wouldn't want to insult people that are considered friends by leaving them off the list. But I think the two poets that I go back to the most are Charlie and Wendell, and by that I mean Charles Bukowski and Wendell Berry.
Yeah, you surprised me maybe 6 months ago by saying that you liked to sit down and read them together, maybe one poem by one and then a bit by the other.
Yeah, I do. I do, because although they were very different, Charles Bukowski died in 1994, and Wendell is very much alive. I just visited with him last week in Kentucky. Although they were very different kinds of men, led very different kinds of life, Charlie was clearly an urban creature, a drunk, a horse player, spent most of his life working in a post office till he found some success as a poet, whereas Wendell has lived the really American agrarian life as a farmer and as a teacher. At the same time, I find great similarities between them, and I think that's the reason I love them both, is they both speak directly from the heart and to the heart. They speak in plain, simple, direct language. The use of metaphor, again, is very limited. The thing about both of those poets, Bukowski and Berry, is that when I finish reading them, I walk away inspired. Inspired either to try to write a better poem or just be a better human being.
This is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome, talking with Steve Sanfield, who's going to be reading from his new collection, The Rain Begins Below, selected slightly longer poems, this Wednesday at 6:45 p.m. Well, that's when the music begins, and the reading at 7:15 at the Madeline Helling Library Community Room. Just wanted to get that in there. Now Steve is holding up books of Bukowski and Barry.
Well, because we talked about this a few weeks ago. We talked about the possibility of reading a poem of each and not identifying them till afterward. So I'm going to read two poems now. One is by Bukowski and one is by Barry.
Okay, and I'll keep my eyes closed.
The listeners can guess, and we'll reveal it at the end. The first one is called Do Not Be Ashamed. You will be walking some night in the comfortable dark of your yard, and suddenly a great light will shine round about you, and behind you will be a wall you never saw before. It will be clear to you suddenly that you were about to escape, and that you are guilty. You misread the complex instructions. You are not a member. You lost your card or never had one. And you will know that they have been there all along, their eyes on your letters and books, the hands in your pockets, the ears wired to your bed. Though you have done nothing shameful, they will want you to be ashamed. They will want you to kneel and weep and say you should have been like them. And once you say you are ashamed, reading the page they hold out to you, then such light as you have made in your history will leave you. They will no longer need to pursue you. You will pursue them, begging forgiveness. They will not forgive you. There is no power against them. It is only candor that is aloof from them, only an inward clarity, unashamed, that they cannot reach. Be ready. When their light has picked you out and their questions are asked, say to them, I am not ashamed. A sure horizon will come around you. The heron will begin his evening flight from the hilltop. And the second one is called The Laughing Heart. Your life is your life. Don't let it be clubbed into dank submission. Be on the watch. There are ways out. There is light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Be on the watch. The gods will offer you chances. Know them. Take them. You can't beat death, but you can beat death in life sometimes. And the more often you learn to do it, the more light there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you.
Now, I can make a guess, but that's only because I saw where the two books were located, but he may have switched them. But from that, I would guess that the first was the Barry and the second
Bukowski. Yeah, the first one was Wendell's, and the second one was Bukowski's.
But if I hadn't had that hint, I don't think I could have.
Well, I commend both poets to the listeners.
How about something of your own? Would you like to give us while we're...
Sure.
Maybe something you're not going to read on Wednesday, or maybe something...
Well, I don't know what I'm going to read on Wednesday. Although I go with a feel, I will be reading from this book, The Rain Begins Below. But until I'm there in the room with the audience, with the listeners, I'm never exactly sure what it will be. But, well, I'll read the poem that has the title in it. It's appropriate now, now that the rains maybe have begun for the season, because the poem is called Drought. It's a poem in three parts. It begins with a quote from my dear friend and comrade, a local poet, Don Dockler. One, can you spare some water? I'm down to rock bottom. No water for the horses. Can't even begin to think about keeping the fruit trees alive. Never been like this before. Mid-November, and the only fires on my neighbor's minds are those that could scar these hills again. Crisp, clean days, hard woods aglow, but at night, no fires are needed. Gardens long ago withered, wells gone dry, high country lakes dead and desolate, drained for the first planting of winter crops in the valley below. Two. Among the Hopi, when the rain doesn't fall, each man and woman asks, what did I do wrong? Did I stumble in the sacred dance, lay down cornmeal with an evil thought? Many seasons ago, when no rain had fallen on the land and spirit for so long, I set out on a journey in search of a rainmaker. It must be my fault. It's because of me the clouds always pass. Rabbis, reverends, roshis, and then atop the high mesas of Arizona, I asked Grandfather David, who was a Hopi religious elder, what I can do. A long night in the kiva, the feet of kachinas shaking the earth. Return to your home. Purify your heart. Ask nothing for yourself. Return to your home. Purify your heart. Ask nothing for yourself. Simple and direct, an impossible task, a quest for heroes who left our world long ago, but what else to do? 3. Now, years later, so many lives bone dry, dreams crushed by reality, visions incomplete, anger and bitterness seeping in through the fault lines of the heart, and still, no rain. I searched the radio dial for a hopeful sign, and here Smokey the Bear died in a cage in Washington, D.C. He was 25 years old. Discouraged, but undaunted, I consult the Talmud at random and find, the rain falls from above, but it begins below. As always, it comes down to letting the rain fall. Dear friends, do what you can.
Which is still a hard one to follow.
It's still a difficult task. But as the poem asks, what else to do?
When you write something like that, are you a person who pretty much keeps what you write, or do you write a great deal and then cut things out?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. Yeah. If you're asking about editing...
I guess... Some people will struggle over one line and then struggle over another line and then struggle over another and may reject many along the way.
Well, I don't call it a struggle. I call it a dance, and I dance constantly with the lines and the words. And I work on poems for years and years. I will write a poem and think that it's done, and, of course, I'll just keep working on it for months, years. I'm still working on some of these poems that are in the book. And who was it? Auden said, no poem is ever finished, just abandoned.
And you're not likely to abandon them for some time?
No, not for a while.
So do you have new projects coming up?
A number, actually. A couple of personal projects. I have been doing this for a while, and I'm continuing to do it, trying to assemble my haiku of the last half century for a collected or a selected haiku. And I've been working on some theater pieces with my old comrade, storytelling comrade, Bob Jenkins. And I've
this
just
would be about the Fools of Helm.
Yeah, we finished a play called The Fools of Helm, which we both like a lot. And the response has been terrific. But because there are 16 characters, most theater companies can't afford to put it on. So now we're working on a play with 4 characters. And we'll continue to refine the other one. And then I've begun a project that I'm working with the Nevada County Library on, working with our wonderful poetess Molly Fisk, who you know well, and the Nevada County Library and Steve Felstadt. We've embarked on a publishing venture called Open to All, What the Library Means to Us. And we're inviting writers, artists, and all citizens of Nevada County to work with us and send us anecdotes, stories, poems, drawings, photos, the form you take is your own, about why you love the library and who doesn't love the library. And it can be about... a librarian of the past or the present, a library from the past to the present, anything you want to submit. We are going to edit this together, and Dave Comstock, our local historian and publisher, will be publishing it under his banner, Comstock Press. It will be for sale probably in the fall of next year. All the proceeds from the book will go to the purchase of new books for the library. And if people want more information on this, just go to mynevadacounty.com website, and look up, open for all, or it will be there. So I'm very excited about this process, and I hope you'll contribute something, Eric.
Well, it's intriguing, and I think I probably will. I'm not sure in what sort. And then of individual things, you're just going to be writing a poem when it occurs to you?
Well, I contribute 2 haiku a week to a newspaper called The Mount Messenger out of Downeyville, California.
Oh, right. I've forgotten about that.
And I've been doing that for 2.5 years, and it's been quite an undertaking. You know, they advertise themselves as the oldest weekly in California, and their motto is Mark Twain wrote here. So I'm honored to be in their pages. And I love being there because I get lots of response to those poems, but again, from people who don't usually read poetry, and they just say, boy, I like that stuff, whatever it is. And so that's ongoing for me. I have to come up with 2 every week.
Now I'll ask you a technical question. Sometimes you say haiku and sometimes you say hoops, because your hoops aren't constrained to the 17 syllables.
Well, neither are my American haiku. That's why I started to call them hoops years ago. People think because they learn in the second grade that haiku is 17 syllables, 5, 7, 5. That's for Japanese. That's the syllabic count in Japanese, and the accents are completely different. And I think it's a tremendous disservice to the form if Americans or English-speaking people try to write in that syllabic count. So I called them hoops for years, and then I just got tired of explaining what hoops were. So I took the liberty of just calling them American haiku.
But they're basically 3 lines.
Basically 3 lines, and very short. They're ranging anywhere from, I don't know, 6 to 17, 18 words.
This is Booktown on KVMR-FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I've been talking with poet, storyteller, editor, author, many other things, Steve Sanfield. He'll be reading from his new collection, The Rain Begins Below, selected slightly longer poems, 1961 to 2005, this Wednesday at 7:15 is actually when the reading begins. But the music, who's doing the music?
The Blue Oak Concert, which is a group of recorder players, will be playing Baroque and medieval music starting at 6:45. Suzanne Olive, who illustrated the book, will have an exhibit of her drawings and prints. So it should be a wonderful evening. I hope your listeners will turn out.
Again, that's in the community room of the Madeline Helling Library this coming Wednesday, November 30th. It's sponsored by the bookseller, Nevada County Library, Poets and Writers, Inc., and the Friends of the Nevada County Library. Thanks so much for being with us, Steve, and I hope you keep going for a long time.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Eric. Thank you.
And this is Booktown on KVMR FM, Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I'll be with you till about 2 o'clock when Jimmy Accardi takes over. I mentioned that we have a whole lot of literary events going on this week. The first was Steve Sandfield, who's going to be reading at the Nevada County Library on Wednesday. On Friday, William O'Daly will be reading at the Studio 131 in Grass Valley. And on Sunday, we're going to be having Pam Houston and Martin Buchanan in a sort of dual event. I've got Martin on the phone right now. Are you there, Martin?
Yes. Hello.
Hello. I've got to turn you down just a little bit.
All right.
The two of you have come up with a very interesting project. Pam Houston is best known as a short story writer. She had two volumes, Cowboys Are My Weakness and Waltzing the Cat. And when she was living in this area a couple of years ago, she started on a new project, which was a novel called Sighthound.
Yes.
And I guess from the very beginning, you're an actor friend of hers, I guess from the very beginning, you decided you would turn it into a one-man show.
Well, not right away, but yeah, pretty early on in it. I mean, because she, the way that she was writing it was, It's so tailor made for the stage. It's all written in monologue form, so it just seemed to be so stage ready just right off the bat.
Although there are at least a dozen characters or narrators in the book itself.
Yes, there are a dozen narrators. Nine of them human, two of them canine, one of them feline.
And did you keep all of them in the version you're going to do?
No, there are six narrators in my adaptation of the book, and four of those are human and two of them are canine.
Now, I said you had this in mind from the very beginning, and maybe that wasn't quite correct, but I know when you were here before and when she read, I think, one chapter from Sighthound a couple of years ago, already then you were working or thinking of your adaptation. Did that affect the writing of the novel at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. The form, that was the form that she wanted to write it in, as I said, in a monologue form. And that was the way it was going to be, you know, from the get-go for her. And she was not thinking about it for the stage at all while she was writing it.
But you were around and you observed a great deal of the writing.
Yes, but I was around and yes, observing this and going, huh, this is really, you know, this would really work on stage and this could really work as a one-man show. It'd be a lot of fun to play all these parts.
So which are the six ones that you finally chose, the six characters?
The six that I chose are the central character in the novel, who is a three-legged Irish wolfhound named Dante. His often maligned, but quite sweet and wonderful sister by adoption, an Irish wolfhound named Rose, and Ray, who is Dante's primary human, and she is a playwright. Howard, who becomes romantically involved with Ray, and eventually they get married in the novel, and he is an actor. Jonathan, who is a writer friend of Ray's, and who am I forgetting?
Uh-oh. I think the doctor.
Of course, Dr. Evans, who is just a wonderful veterinarian who not only takes care of Dante, but actually forms a good, you know, a really strong relationship with him.
Now, almost all fiction has some autobiographical element. Pam Houston's fiction has it in spades. It's not that it's a direct transcription of what happened in her life, but she takes a lot from her own life and then adds other things. And so there are many people in the book who may be based on people you knew. Did that make it more difficult?
Well, no, not really. There's enough. There's so much, you know, cross. I don't know what the right word is. Kind of just mix of, you know, actual person, completely made up person, or something that's in the middle between a completely made up person and an actual person. There's so much of a mix of that a lot of times, you know, pretty early on, you know, I start forgetting, you know, did so-and-so really say this, or did so-and-so really do this? And it really pretty quickly just became Jonathan, this character who is this amalgam of things, is his own entity, with his own way of thinking and his own way of speaking. So that wasn't hard. It was a little bit harder with Howard, because with Pam writing the book, I always felt all along, I always joked with her, but the joke was true. As an actor, I said, hey, I think all press is good press, so you write whatever you want. You can write exactly what I say if you want, and call it Howard, and that's fine with me. But even Howard has a lot of made-up elements in him, but he's probably the closest, I think, to an actual person of anyone in the book, that person being me. And that was probably a little bit strange.
I would think so.
Yeah, that was a little bit strange, going, I'm basically playing myself on stage. But even that, after a while, I started viewing him as a character. And there's enough difference between Howard and me that it was easy to make that switch in my mind.
And you think that Howard is closer to you than Ray is to Pam?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. I think that Howard is closer to me than Ray is to Pam.
Now, in your performance on Sunday, you're going to be playing two dogs, three men, and a woman. Are you going to be using sets, costumes?
Yes, I'll be using, I have a nice compact set that was designed here for the Creed Repertory Theater here in Creed, Colorado. I'll be using costumes that were also designed for a production here in Creed, Colorado. And I will be changing from one costume to the other and from one character to another right in front of the audience's eyes. There's nothing hidden in this production. There's no secrets. You see all the character transformations occur right in front of you, and you see the set change right in front of you, and that's kind of the way I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be very nakedly theatrical.
The performance is going to be this Sunday, December 4th, in the evening at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
During the day, both you and Pam are also going to be conducting workshops, hers on writing, I guess.
Yes.
And yours on acting.
Yes. Yes. I'm teaching a workshop that starts at 2 o'clock and I believe goes until 4. And it's going to be an acting workshop that is performing literature on stage, but performing literature on stage in a specific style. It's a style that is used by Word for Word in San Francisco and used by a company called Book It Repertory Theater in Seattle, Washington, and probably other theaters in the country too, but those are the two that I'm the most aware of.
And in those, they do it as Word for Word says, word for word. They don't change the text at all, but they incorporate it with actors, with costumes, with moving around on the stage and actually acting it all out, but at the same time narrating it as if it were a book.
Exactly. There is no narrator in this style. The actors, the adaptation that occurs within this style is basically choosing which character is going to speak speak what part of the descriptive text, because the descriptive text, all the he said and she said and, you know, just describing the setting that that characters are in, becomes divided up among among the already speaking characters within the story.
And so what you're going to be doing in your workshop is introducing this technique and letting people know how it works and how they can do it themselves?
Yes, and I'm going to have short selections from a wonderful story by Alice Munro called Floating Bridge. I'm going to have short selections from that story that that I'm going to get people up on their feet and have them, you know, trying out how it feels to perform in this way, because it is a little bit strange to speak, to speak a line of text that is in quotes, and then to occasionally speak about yourself in the second or the third person right after you have spoken these lines out loud. It can be a little bit jarring at first for people, yeah.
I bet. And this might be a good introduction to the technique, because Word for Word will be in Nevada County at the end of January, beginning of February. They're going to be doing this year's Community Asian Theater of the Sierras production of a story by Amy Tan called Immortal Heart.
Ah.
So.
That's perfect. Well,
anyone who wants to see that might want to come to your workshop first and get an idea of how it's done.
Yes. And I'm much more familiar with how Book It Repertory Theater does it, but it's the same kind of style. Book It Repertory Theater is a theater in Seattle that started out doing only short stories, and they did not, as Word for Word does, they did not change a single word of the text. They just adapted it by deciding who is going to say what.
And before your workshop, I guess Pam is going to do a writing workshop from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Do you know what she's going to concentrate on?
I do not. I don't know. I've helped out at a lot of Pam Houston writing workshops, so I could take some guesses, but they would be educated guesses at best.
And I called her, left her several messages, but didn't hear back from her. And the message on her machine was, if I don't answer the phone, I must be someplace a cell phone doesn't reach.
Oh, yes. She's traveling kind of all over the place, and she's been in constant motion ever since this book came out. And so you are not the only one who has told me it's been difficult to reach her. I've had difficulty at times. Several people have told me this. But yeah, basically I think that's just as a result of her being in constant motion ever since the book was released on January 24th.
And I should tell people, if they want to get in touch with you or with getting into the workshops, it's a little easier than that. If you want to go for either of the workshops, you can call 530-265-2675. Or to get tickets for the play, you can call 530-272-5812. I just called it a play. Would you call it a play or a...
It's definitely a play.
Okay.
It's definitely a play. It's a one-man show, and it was, you know, if I do say so myself, it was very well received here in Colorado. And it's not, you know, a lot of people have asked me, well, what if I'm not really a dog lover? That doesn't really matter. This is a play that is about common experiences that we all have as human beings. It's about love and loss and how you deal with loss and how you deal with the decision of, am I going to go ahead and love again, you know, knowing that I could experience loss again and it could be very painful. I mean, that's kind of the central theme of the book, and it's something that we deal with all the time in our relationships with people, with pets that we have, with special animals in our lives. I think it's got something to say to everybody.
And in this case, one of the early decisions made when Dante the dog lost one leg from a very difficult form of cancer was that it might have been time to say his life was at an end, but instead Ray chose to keep him alive for 2 more years, and that made both of them much happier, but made the final parting much more difficult.
Yeah, it definitely made them both a lot happier, and the Ray character does not regret, you know, for a millisecond that she decided to, you know, to do whatever it takes to give the now three-legged Dante as long and healthy and happy a life as possible. But it probably did, in the end, make the parting more, you know, more difficult. But the beautiful thing about that, though, is that even though it made that parting very difficult for Ray, the character of Ray is not dampened at all in her decision to go ahead and continue to give her heart completely to whoever or whatever creature comes across her path that she feels inclined to do so.
Although I guess in the process, you in particular have found that you've developed an attachment to Irish wolfhounds.
Yes.
Somewhere toward the beginning of the book, Ray says something about high Tibetan lamas. If they do a very good job of being high Tibetan lamas, they get to come back as Irish wolfhounds.
Yes.
And it sounds like you might agree with her.
Oh, well. you know, I do think that they're very special creatures. They're unique dogs, not just because of their extreme size, but the extreme size seems to carry along with it a very large love, and there's a kind of nobility and a serenity to these dogs in general that is really kind of wonderful to be around.
Well, if you want to find out more about this, the one-man performance of Sighthound is going to take place this Sunday, December 4th at the Center for the Arts in Grass Valley. If you want tickets for that, the number to call is 272-5812. Or before that, from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., Pam Houston will conduct a writing workshop. And from 2 to 4, Martin Buchanan, with whom we're talking right now, will conduct a acting workshop titled From Page to Stage, Literature as Theater. And for either of the workshops, you call 530-265-2675. Thanks very much for being with us, Martin.
Thank you, Eric.
This is Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I've got just a few more minutes before making way for Jimmy Accardi. But before I leave, I'd like to mention one other event taking place this Friday, December 2nd, at 7:30 p.m. at Studio 131 Richardson Street in Grass Valley. And if I said that funny, it's called Studio 131, and it's located at 131 Richardson Street. William O'Daly will be reading from his poems, his translations, and excerpts from a novel in progress. He was here, maybe in the end of September, reading from at the bookseller from his translations of Pablo Neruda, and I guess impressed enough people by that they asked him to come back and see if he would divulge a little bit more of himself and not just the translations. He is going to read a couple of excerpts from two Pablo Neruda books, which he's currently translating, ones that are not yet available. And he says maybe a couple of translations from ancient Chinese, which he has done with Han Ping Chen, then a number of his own poems. Those will be the largest part of the reading, and a brief excerpt or two from This Earthly Life, which is a historical novel that takes place in China, I believe in the Cultural Revolution, that I believe he's also had help from Han Ping Chen on that as well. So that's William O'Daly. Will be at Studio 131 in Grass Valley. Friday, December 2nd at 7:30 p.m. The studio is at 131 Richardson Street, and if you want to call for more information, it's 272-1680. This has been Booktown on KVMR FM in Nevada City. I'm Eric Tome. I'll be back in 2 weeks. Stay tuned now for Jimmy Accardi's Rock and Roll Party.